Say these words when you lie down and when you rise up, when you go out and when you return. In times of mourning and in times of joy, inscribe them on your doorposts, embroider them on your garments, tattoo them on your shoulders. Teach them to your children, your neighbors, your enemies. Recite them in your sleep, here in the cruel shadow of empire. Another world is possible.
Thus spoke the prophet Roque Dalton. Altogether, they have more death than we, but altogether, we have more life than they. There is more bloody death on their hands than we could ever wield, unless we lay down our souls to become them, and then we will lose everything. So instead,
imagine winning. This is your sacred task. This is your power. Imagine every detail of winning. The exact smell of the summer streets in which no one has been shot, the muscles you have never unclenched from worry, gone as soft as newborn skin, the sparkling taste of food when we know that no one on earth is hungry, that the beggars are fed, that the old man under the bridge and the woman wrapping herself in thin sheets in the back seat of a car and the children who suck on stones nest under a flock of roofs that keep multiplying their shelter. Lean with all your being towards that day when the poor of the world shake down a rain of good fortune out of the heavy clouds and justice rolls down like waters.
Defend the world in which we win as if it were your child. It is your child. Defend it as if it were your lover. It is your lover.
When you inhale, and when you exhale, breathe the possibility of another world into the 37.2 trillion cells of your body until it shines with hope, and then imagine more.
Imagine rape is unimaginable. Imagine war is a scarcely credible rumor. That the crimes of our age, the grotesque inhumanities of greed, the sheer and astounding shamelessness of it, the vast fortunes made by stealing lives, the horrible normalcy it came to have, is unimaginable to our heirs, the generations of the free.
Don't waver. Don't let despair sink its sharp teeth into the throat with which you sing. Escalate your dreams. Make them burn so fiercely that you can follow them down any dark alleyway of history and not lose your way. Make them burn clear as a starry drinking gourd over the grim fog of exhaustion. And keep walking.
Hold hands. Share water. Keep imagining.
So that we and the children of our children's children may live.
Thank you for doing that. Can you remain while the world feels wrong? Can you remain while the world feels wrong? This was an important teaching associated with the folklore of Baba Yaga due to her role as a guardian of liminal space. Her domain is the place where normal rules stop working, where time bends and directions reverse and familiar logic falls apart. Folklorists like Vladimir Propp describe this as a moment when a character enters the other world, and one of the ways Baba Yaga tests people is by seeing how they truly respond when reality no longer behaves the way that it should. Does it sound familiar? And this is where the task comes in to remain while the world feels wrong. In East Slavic folklore, people who entered Baba Yaga's forest often experienced disorientation. Paths turn back on themselves and day and night blur. The forest feels hostile, uncanny, and totally unsettling. And that's not accidental. That is part of the initiation. The task isn't to fix the distortion, it is to endure it. Those who panic, who rush, or try to force order onto the situation usually fail. They flee, they break a rule, or they act out of fear, but the ones who succeed are the ones who stay still, who observe and accept that they're no longer in the human world. This reflects a very old belief in Slavic tradition that entering a sacred or otherworldly space requires surrendering complete control. You do not dominate liminal space, you survive it by respecting it. Baba Yaga doesn't explain the rules, and she doesn't comfort the seeker. She waits to see whether the seeker can tolerate uncertainty without collapsing into fear or arrogance. So when the task is to remain while everything feels wrong, it's a test of inner stability. Can we stay present when our usual reference points kind of vanish? Can we resist the urge to escape, to correct, or to explain what is happening? In folklore terms, this is the moment where the old self begins to dissolve. In Baba Yaga's world, transformation does not begin with action. It begins with endurance and with willingness to look around, pay attention, and stay open to what we do not yet understand. If we can remain when the world feels wrong, we've proven that we can stand at the threshold without breaking. That's Jen from Earth Fairy Holistics. Reverend Dr. Nicole Kirk began her Sunday sermon at last year's UUA General Assembly in Baltimore with the following: volatile markets, a trade war, controversy over citizenship, foreign interventions, businesses closing, economic turmoil, global uncertainty. 1815 was a pivotal year for the United States. 1815 sounds so familiar, doesn't it? Former Secretary of Health, Education, and Welfare John W. Gardner stated that history never feels like history when you're living through it. And we are living through it. It feels so wrong, doesn't it, the world? It feels so wrong. From what we thought we had, from the world we dream about, from any progress it seemed we were making. So far from what we value, from the love and liberation that we long for. So far from the oneness and beauty and hope. It may be hard to imagine anything other than annihilation at this point. But there is more, and there will be more. Can we remain when the world feels wrong? Reverend Eileen Wiviot, in her summary of the 2023 book, The Fourth Turning Is Here, it looks like this if you're interested. It's by Neil Howe, and it's based on the well-established theory of generational and cyclical change, which is relatively predictable throughout all societies and throughout time. She says that while it's true that we can't predict the future and we don't exactly know how things are going to turn out, history does rhyme. And exploring history can help us imagine what might arise beyond our current experience. In the book, Howe lays out a cyclical pattern of Anglo-American history that occurs in units of 80 to 100 years, called a saeculum, divided into roughly two-decade increments called turnings. In those 80 to 100 years, the first turning, the first two decades, are a high, an upbeat era of strengthening institutions and weakening individualism. Think about the post-Depression, post-World War II decades when institutions were strong, and so was homogeneity and social conformity was the norm, and family bonds were prioritized, right? The second turning is an awakening, a turbulent era when that new order comes under attack, a passionate era of spiritual upheaval. The civil rights movement, the women's movement, gay rights, and the sexual liberation movements of the 60s and 70s. Individual expression starts to challenge norms and systems of power. And the third turning is an unraveling, a downcast era of strengthening individualism and of weakening institutions. Reagan's Morning in America and Greed is Good. The slow weakening of institutions and community in the 80s and 90s that culminated in the 9/11 attacks and then the long war that followed. And then the fourth turning is a crisis, a decisive era when an old civic order is replaced by a new one. This turning began with the Great Recession of 2008. It gave rise to right-wing populism, Christian nationalism, and the pandemic, and has brought us to the cataclysmic regime of the present moment. We can trace this 80 to 100-year pattern repeating across many cultures and continents over the breadth of human history. We can trace this pattern in our own history, World War II and the Great Depression, and before that, the Civil War, and before that, the Revolutionary War. Imagine how impossible it must have felt to be standing at the edge of each of those transitions. How hopeless, how hard to imagine anything good on the other side of that fourth turning. And yet, something did come after. Something always did. But we can also look at the first turnings that followed each of these devastating times of crisis to prepare ourselves for what might emerge next. Eileen Wiviat. Another world is possible. It is as bad as we think it is right now, though. We're not imagining it, and it has happened before. How do we remain when the world feels wrong? Recently, Heather Cox Richardson visited the John Stewart podcast. It's on YouTube and worth your time. You can find it there. She, too, looks at the patterns of history. Many of you read her and listen to her during the week. She looks at the patterns of history, and I feel like she kind of offers a kind hand and a good word out of the depths of despair and confusion that many of us are feeling. In this particular podcast, she spoke of studying the stock market crash of 1929. She was curious about life before the crash, so she looked at the newspapers for the day before, October 28th, 1929. It was the opening night of the opera in New York City, and there were all these stories about the people, opulence really, beautiful coaches, men in uniforms, and women wearing diamonds and furs, all headed to opening night at the opera. I don't think they had any idea. Farther down the page, though, what she found was a really small note about a man who had died by suicide because his business had gone under. He was distraught, and he just couldn't face the fact that he was the only failure in this entire city or country or world, at least in his mind, right? And Heather Cox Richardson says if he had just managed to hang on for 12 hours, he would have discovered that he was not alone. There would have been so many people there with him, and he would have realized that he had not failed, the system had failed, and that together they could rebuild it. Neil Howe, in the book, The Fourth Turning is Here, parallels the four turnings to the cycle of the seasons. In our nation, winter is here. It's not winter is coming anymore, for those of you Game of Thrones fans. It's not winter is coming, winter is here. But in nature, spring always follows winter. Somehow and somewhere, It always will. The epilogue of the fourth turning is here puts it plainly. This is a quote from Neil Howe. "We are distressed because we have entered a season of history that we dread completing. We understand that the fourth turning is a season of crisis likely to bring wrenching and unwanted change in our lives. We know that there is nothing worse than a fourth turning, except to not have a fourth turning. But if avoiding the fourth turning is not possible or even desirable, then what should we do? We should follow ancient wisdom and conform our behavior to the season. If it's winter, we should act like it's winter. We should help our community to prepare to be strong in the coming spring while allowing the least possible suffering so long as the storms rage. We should help our community prepare to be strong in the coming spring while allowing the least possible suffering so long as the storms rage. To remain when the world feels wrong, to endure, to stand at the threshold and not break. When it's winter, act like it's winter. Prepare for spring." That ancient wisdom, and it is, I believe, exactly what Unitarian Universalists are called to do right now. This is where our values become not just aspirational, but survival tools. Love at the center. Always love. Love at the center of this congregation and of our lives of individuals, though that is always a choice that each of us must make. And as we continue to live those values, to work for equity and justice, to following our own path to transformation, honoring others' free and responsible search for truth, recognizing our interdependence on each other and on planet Earth, and letting that make us both grateful and generous. Those are the values that we have. Remember the bell hooks quote that Reverend David Miller shared last week. "To be truly visionary, we have to root our imagination in our concrete reality while simultaneously imagining possibilities beyond that reality." We need a purple crayon, I think. We hold the hard truth of the fourth turning and that the world feels wrong and that another world is possible. We must imagine possibilities beyond this current reality. We prepare ourselves and future generations, your children and their children, for a world made more whole. We hold on to the values and we remember the lessons of this time. And here are some of the ways that we do that. This is what nearly every source says. And by source, I mean what Heather Cox Richardson recommended in the podcast and what queer Black women who have been in this struggle for oh so long have learned to do. They've learned how to survive and to thrive. And it's in Howe's book. We make a community of people connected. Here, yes, and there. In your neighborhoods, with parents in your children's schools, in restaurants and at the grocery store, and especially with strangers at rallies. We find organizations to partner with to feed and house people if necessary. We show up and we get in the face of fascism. We tend to our inner lives. Nurturing the human spirit means intentionally cultivating inner peace, purpose, and connection to something greater than ourselves, supporting mental and emotional well-being. It involves practices like meditation, time in nature, music, prayer, walking, whatever opens you back up when the world has closed you down. We can't pour from an empty cup, and we cannot fight for a world that we can no longer imagine. So keep your imagination and your curiosity, and keep your sense of purpose. Systems don't collapse because they lose power. They collapse because they lose meaning. As long as we know who we are and what we value, we can survive almost anything. And we have to value other humans, and we have to value all of life, all of nature. We have to value what keeps life going and not what destroys it. When a civilization forgets its purpose, it forgets its responsibilities. We must return again and again, not to the surface forms and rituals, but to the inner values that shape our identity as a congregation, as a people, as a country, as individuals. Art and music and literature become essential during the fourth turning. Ursula Le Guin, as if they aren't ever always important, but especially during the fourth turning, Ursula Le Guin says, "We live in capitalism. Its power seems inescapable, but so did the divine right of kings. Any human power can be resisted and changed by human beings. Resistance and change often begin in art and very often in the art of words. We will need writers who can remember freedom. Poets, visionaries, painters, musicians, artists who can sculpt new realities before the rest of us can see them." I saw a meme the other day that read, "Don't forget to rethink the best possible scenario too." If you're going to overthink, imagine the best possible scenario too. Dawson McKee, a Canadian writer, said this recently. "Dear America, I can tell your gentlest people are doing the heaviest lifting. They're feeding people, protecting people, defending people, comforting people, organizing people, and carrying a country that keeps calling their pain politics. If America has a soul left, it is living inside the people who refuse to stop caring. Your cruelest people may have the microphone right now, but your best people still have the moral weight." To remain when the world feels wrong is to endure, to carry the moral weight, to risk joy and embrace life. Here in the cruel shadow of empire, we must remind ourselves another world is possible. May we live into this history we are living with the enduring power of love. Amen, and blessed be.